Hello, and welcome to the Deep Dive. Grab a cup of your favorite brew, because we're about to plunge into a week that global strategists are calling a volatility vortex. Imagine a financial and geopolitical maelstrom, just brewing, where every major event seems to, well, amplify the next. This week, September 14th through 21st, 2025, it's truly unlike any other we've seen recently. We've taken a whole stack of your sources, articles, research, your own notes, and our mission today is to really extract the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight. Think of this deep dive as your shortcut to being incredibly well-informed, giving you those aha moments, and helping you understand not just what happened, but why it matters, and, you know, what it could mean for your world. We'll be connecting the dots between an unprecedented convergence of central bank decisions, escalating geopolitical tensions, profound challenges to democratic legitimacy, and a truly volatile financial market environment. Our focus will be on the intricate details of these events, their deeper background context and themes, and most critically, their market implications. As we begin this journey, what immediately jumps out at you?
Let's unpack this. Expert speaker, our sources highlight four core themes that define this extraordinary week, almost like the four cornerstones of this volatility vortex.
Yeah.
Can you set the stage for us with those major themes?
Absolutely. What's truly fascinating here, and maybe a bit concerning, is that these aren't disparate occurrences happening in isolation. They're deeply interconnected. They're creating a self-reinforcing cycle.
Right.
We're seeing a global system under such immense stress that crisis points are clustering rather than, you know, distributing themselves over time.
So everything's hitting at once.
It's like multiple pressure points all reaching their peak simultaneously.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Scary sense.
First up, you've highlighted the great monetary synchronization. Our sources point to four major central banks announcing policy decisions within an incredibly tight 72-hour window. We're talking the U.S. Federal Reserve, the Bank of Canada, the Bank of England, and the Bank of Japan. That's practically unheard of. What does this convergence really signify for the global economy?
Right. This clustering, it isn't just a coincidence, and it's certainly not a sign of, like, robust, independent economic strength anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it reflects a synchronized global economic weakness, a weakness that is now demanding a coordinated, or at least highly correlated, response from these major players.
Okay, so weakness is forcing their hand.
Pretty much. And the inherent risk here is that any policy error, no matter how small, could be amplified across all major markets simultaneously. You get this cascade effect.
Right. One wrong move echoes everywhere.
Exactly. And this raises an important question for all of us. You know, is this some masterful pre-planned coordination to stave off a global downturn?
Right.
Or is it a more frantic, almost panicked response to deeper systemic issues bubbling under the surface?
How do we figure that out? What's the context?
Well, to truly understand the context, we have to look back a bit. Remember Fed Chair Powell's August address at Jackson Hole?
Yeah, the annual symposium, always closely watched.
His remarks signaled an openness to rate cuts, which immediately got markets buzzing. The symposium itself was themed labor markets in transition, right?
Oh, yeah.
And discussions there highlighted some underlying global concerns, things like the impact of fertility decline on long-term growth. Claudia Golden from Harvard emphasized that.
Okay.
And also how artificial intelligence, AI, could potentially impact like a third of jobs for a quarter of their tasks. Laura Veldkamp from Columbia suggested that could lead to a 5% decline in the wage share.
So big underlying structural shifts being discussed.
Exactly. And that set a very cautious, almost defensive tone for global economic policy going forward.
Okay, so that's the backdrop from August. What happened more recently?
Then on September 11th, just ahead of this critical week, the European Central Bank, the ECB, decided to hold its interest rates at 2%. They effectively paused an easing cycle that many expected to continue.
So they stopped cutting rates.
Yeah, which created this notable transatlantic divergence in monetary policy, especially since markets were already pricing in a 99% probability of that hold.
Even with inflation near target.
Yeah, inflation was at 2.1%, basically on target, but Eurozone growth was just sluggish, 0.1% in Q2. So they paused.
Meanwhile, what about China?
Well, China's central bank, the PBOC, had already made a significant shift. They pivoted to a moderately loose monetary policy, their first such move since the 2008 global financial crisis.
Wow, moderately loose. That sounds significant.
It is. It included expected 40-50 basis point cuts bringing rates close to 1% by year-end. Plus, new facilities, like a security swap facility, central bank lending for share buybacks.
So basically pumping liquidity into their stock market.
Essentially, yeah. Government-backed liquidity. And this aggressive stimulus from China, it threatens to export inflation globally.
How so?
Well, massive demand from China could drive up commodity prices, put upward pressure on global prices. It creates a very tricky situation for other central banks.
Got it. So we've got the Fed potentially easing, the ECB holding, China stimulating.
Exactly. So the key insight here is that we're dealing with this multi-layered bind. The U.S. Federal Reserve easing could pressure other central banks to follow suit just to avoid significant currency appreciation against the dollar.
Right. Nobody wants their currency to get too strong too fast.
Then the ECB is caught between potential new Trump tariffs hitting European exports and their persistently weak domestic growth.
The tough spot.
And China's massive stimulus effort risks igniting global inflation, making everyone else's job harder. It's a complex, interconnected web of pressures.
That's a perfect summary of the bind these central banks find themselves in. Really highlights how interconnected the global financial system is. Now, moving beyond economics, the second theme is geopolitical realignment and escalation. Our sources detail everything from an emergency Arab Islamic summit, reacting to Israeli airstrikes in Qatar, to major military exercises in East Asia, and new European Union sanctions on Russia. It truly sounds like the post-Cold War world order is undergoing a profound shift.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you're absolutely right. It feels like a historical inflection point. The post-1991 world order is visibly fracturing right before our eyes.
Fracturing how?
We're observing regional powers asserting greater autonomy. They're actively exploring alternative alignments, moving away from their traditional partners.
So not just talk. Real shift.
Not just diplomatic rhetoric, no. These are tangible steps towards a truly multipolar world, meaning a world where power is distributed among multiple major poles, not just one or two dominant ones.
Okay, like BRICS.
Exactly. The BRICS alliance, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, has significantly expanded. It now counts 10 full members, with Indonesia joining early in 2025 as the first Southeast Asian nation.
10 members now. And they have partners, too.
Yeah, 13 new partner countries. Collectively, this expanded group represents a formidable economic bloc. We're talking 38.83% of global GDP by purchasing power parity. And even larger, 46% of GDP, when you include their partners, covers 55% of the world's population.
That's huge.
And discussions within BRICS around a new unit currency and a BRICS Pay blockchain system, they're openly challenging the dominance of SWIFT.
The financial messaging system we talked about earlier.
Right. And this challenge to the dollar supremacy comes at a time when former U.S. President Trump is threatening 100% tariffs on countries he perceives as undermining the dollar.
Wow. So pressure from multiple angles.
And on another front, look at the June 2025 Hague summit. It effectively saw Ukraine's NATO membership path, well, dead under the current U.S. administration.
Really? How so?
Ukrainian President Zelensky was largely relegated to side events. The joint statement from the summit only mentioned Ukraine twice, and notably, no explicit condemnation of Russia.
That's a major shift.
It basically forced Ukraine and its allies to explore alternatives. Things like Article 5, like protection from the U.S. and Europe, alongside raised defense spending commitments, like 5% of GDP for some allies.
So the big picture takeaway here.
The key takeaway is that this fracturing architecture means traditional international institutions like the UN, the WTO, they're becoming increasingly irrelevant. Security guarantees are shifting from these big multilateral agreements to more bilateral or smaller minilateral arrangements. It's a fundamental reshaping of global power dynamics.
It's clear those traditional structures are under immense pressure. That leads us directly to the third theme, democratic legitimacy under siege. This week, we're seeing elections and referendums globally, but with significant questions around their fairness and transparency. Places like Russia, Syria, Malawi, Guinea, even in established democracies like Germany. It's a complex picture.
Indeed. And this represents a sort of global crisis of democratic institutions, where the form of democracy is maintained. You still have elections, parliaments, but the substance is hollowed out.
Legitimation theater, you call it.
Exactly. Elections are increasingly becoming legitimation theater rather than genuine mechanisms for citizen choice or accountability. We're seeing a normalization of military or judicial interventions in political processes. Opposition parties are often dissolved or their leaders banned on technical grounds. It effectively removes any real challenge.
You give some examples leading up to this week.
Sure. Let's look at some context. In Argentina, remember the upcoming October legislative elections? Well, Javier Milei's party, La Libertad Avanza, just suffered a crushing defeat in Buenos Aires on September 7th. Only 34% versus the Peronists' 47%.
Ouch. Why?
Milei himself acknowledged a clear defeat. There were corruption allegations against his own sister, and unemployment's at its highest since 2021. His whole austerity agenda is being severely tested, raises questions about his government's stability.
Okay, Argentina. What else?
In Poland, the conservative Karol Nawrocki's victory in the June 2025 presidential election, he won with 50.89% backed by the Law and Justice Party, PIS. That immediately created legislative paralysis with Prime Minister Tusk because Nawrocki vowed to block key government reforms. Gridlock.
Right, and Thailand. That was dramatic.
Extremely. The Constitutional Court dissolved the Move Forward Party in August 2024, banned its popular leader, Pita Limjaroenrat, for 10 years.
Just for trying to amend a law.
For attempting to amend the Lese Majeste law, yeah. Effectively preventing them from governing, despite winning the most seats in the 2023 election. Forced 143 MPs to scramble and join a new People's Party within 60 days.
So the pattern is?
The key insight is this clear global pattern. Elections becoming a facade, military and judicial interventions normalized, legitimate opposition systematically sidelined. It undermines the very essence of democratic choice.
Those examples paint a stark picture of democratic backsliding. And that brings us to our final core theme for the week, economic stress as a political catalyst. From a massive general strike in France against austerity measures to Malawi's elections dominated by economic crisis, it seems economic pressures are directly translating into profound political instability, almost instantly.
Exactly. And this raises an important question about the reinforcing feedback loops between economics and politics. It's becoming much tighter.
How so?
We're seeing this dangerous trend where economic stress immediately translates into political upheaval. It amplifies instability rather than dampening it. The fuse is just shorter than ever.
Can you give examples of that economic stress?
Consider Germany, for instance. Facing its longest recession in post-war history, a triple dip. GDP shrinking 0.5% in 2025 after contractions in 23 and 24.
Triple dip. Wow.
Their manufacturing PMI, that key indicator, has been below 50, signaling contraction for an astonishing 26 consecutive months. Hit a low of 42.1.
26 months. That's over 2 years of contraction.
Yeah. Pushed unemployment to 6.3%. Led major corporations like Siemens, Bosch, ThyssenKrupp to cut over 60,000 jobs. And this profound economic weakness in Germany deeply impacts the broader European fragmentation zone, as some call it. It exacerbates social and political tensions across the continent.
Okay. Germany's struggling. What about elsewhere?
Then there's Lebanon. The banking sector there is in a state of what some are calling a zombie apocalypse.
Zombie apocalypse? What does that mean?
It holds an estimated $72 billion in losses. Banks are effectively operating as zombie banks,
meaning
technically insolvent, but kept alive by government support or just lack of resolution. Depositors face severe withdrawal limits, like $400 a month.
Just $400 a month?
Yeah. The Lebanese lira stabilized, but only after losing a staggering 98% of its value since 2019. Recent conflict costs totaled $8.5 billion, 47% of its GDP. Poverty surged from 25% in 2019 to 74% in 2021. It's a catastrophic situation.
Unbelievable. And the UK.
And in the United Kingdom, we've seen this disturbing rise in far-right riots and ongoing protests, where immigration, interestingly, rather than the severe cost of living crisis, has become the primary driver of social unrest. 46% of Britons cite it as their top issue.
So economic pain channels into other grievances.
Exactly. The key insight here is how immediate and direct the link has become. Economic woes aren't just economic anymore. They are immediately fueling social and political turmoil, creating a dangerous feedback loop.
Those are truly compelling insights into the interconnected global challenges. So many converging forces. Now, let's dig into the week's crucial events, day by day. Starting with Sunday, September 14th, 2025. Elections and diplomacy really setting the stage. Expert speaker, let's unpack Russia's single election day. It's the final day of polls across 81 of Russia's 89 regions. What's the true nature of these elections, given the broader context you just described about democratic legitimacy?
Well, this is primarily a large-scale administrative exercise. It's about political consolidation designed to reinforce the Kremlin's control.
So, not really about choice.
Not in a meaningful sense, no. The ruling United Russia Party is expected to achieve overwhelming victories, solidifying power, installing loyal regional leaders. A significant and calculated feature of these elections is the nomination of over 1,600 Ukraine war veterans.
Veterans, why?
It's part of President Putin's new elite strategy. These veterans are effectively guaranteed a 25% vote increase in the primaries, ensuring their path into positions of influence. It rewards loyalty and ties the military closer to the political system.
Okay. And how are the elections run?
The extensive use of remote electronic voting, or REV, across 24 regions, that raises significant concerns about electoral manipulation. It effectively cements predetermined outcomes. It's less about genuine democratic competition, more a mechanism to gauge public compliance, test the efficiency of the political machine, and, like I said, reward loyalists.
Got it. Meanwhile, in Germany, the most populous state, North Rhine-Westphalia, is holding local elections. This is the first major electoral test for the federal coalition government, the CDU and SPD. What does this tell us about the political landscape in such an established democracy, especially with Germany facing that recession?
Projections show the CDU leading maybe 32%, SPD trailing. But what's particularly telling and aligns with our theme of democratic legitimacy under siege, even here, is the far-right alternative for Germany, the AfD. They could potentially reach 15, 16% in Western Germany.
15%. In the West. That's high for them there.
It is. And it signals a growing mainstream political fracture, even in an established democracy like Germany. It reflects internal pressures, widespread dissatisfaction, especially following a snap federal election in February, and against that backdrop of Germany's longest post-war recession.
So economic stress hitting home politically.
Definitely. It demonstrates how economic stress can translate directly into significant political shifts, empowering populist or extremist parties, even in mature democracies.
And across the globe, Macau is holding its legislative assembly elections under new 2024 patriotism screening rules.
Mm-hmm.
What impact do these new rules have on democratic choice there?
In Macau, you have 8 candidate lists competing for 14 directly elected seats. But the impact of these rules is profound.
How so?
A dozen pro-democracy candidates have already been disqualified under these patriotism screening rules, which essentially vet candidates for loyalty to Beijing.
So only patriots can run.
That's the idea. It ensures that pro-Beijing parties are expected to dominate the assembly. Jose Pereira Coutinho's New Hope represents one of the few remaining, albeit constrained, opposition options. It's a clear illustration of democratic institutions being hollowed out. The electoral facade remains, but the substance of genuine choice, open political contestation, is severely constrained by political control.
Right. Okay. Now, here's where it gets really interesting on the geopolitical front. An emergency Arab Islamic summit has been convened. This is in response to an Israeli airstrike on Hamas leadership in Qatar on September 9th. What are the key issues being discussed? What are the broader implications?
This 2025 Arab-Islamic Extraordinary Summit is a critical event. It's fundamentally examining perceived failures of U.S. security guarantees, and specifically the violation of Qatari sovereignty by that airstrike.
So, questioning the U.S. role.
Absolutely. Discussions are expected to focus on a potential strategic shift towards defense partnerships with powers like China and Turkey. Also, a comprehensive review of multi-billion-dollar U.S. arms deals and even a possible reduction of the U.S. military presence in the region.
A reduction. That would be huge.
It's potentially a historical inflection point. It could signal a fundamental, almost tectonic abandonment of the U.S. security architecture that has dominated the Middle East for decades. The key insight, a profound shift in regional alliances could be underway.
And the market implications of that potential shift.
From a market perspective, this perceived shift away from established U.S. partnerships,
yeah.
Well, it could have immediate and significant implications for global oil prices.
Ow.
Any signal of reduced U.S. influence or protection over crucial oil transit routes or major production facilities in the Gulf, that could trigger an immediate and substantial risk premium in oil.
So oil prices could spike.
We could see crude oil prices spiking sharply. Especially if the summit's declarations are seen as concrete steps towards a new regional security order, one without the U.S. as its cornerstone. Traders will be keenly watching for any impact on the reliability and flow of global oil supply.
A huge day for both politics and potential market shifts. Now, let's move into Monday, September 15th, 2025. Economic data and military posturing continue globally. First, China's National Bureau of Statistics is releasing August 2025 economic data. What key indicators should we be watching, and what's the expected outcome after their recent shift to moderately loose monetary policy?
Right, we're looking at a comprehensive release. Key indicators like GDP, but also August industrial production, retail sales, fixed asset investment, real estate development.
Oh, whole picture.
Pretty much. Industrial output growth is expected to continue its trend from the first half of 2025. That was a robust 6.8% year-over-year increase. Urban unemployment likely hovering around 5.2%.
And why is this data so critical right now?
Because China's moderately loose monetary policy, with its expected rate cuts and new lending facilities, it threatens to export inflation globally, especially if the stimulus is significant and demand within China outstrips global supply, particularly for raw materials and commodities.
So strong Chinese growth could mean higher inflation elsewhere.
Potentially, yeah. A robust growth figure might suggest even more aggressive stimulus is yet to come, amplifying those global inflationary concerns we talked about earlier.
Okay. Meanwhile, a major five-day trilateral military exercise, Freedom Edge 25, kicks off today. International waters near South Korea's Jeju Island. This involves the United States, South Korea, and Japan. What's the significance of this? And how is North Korea likely to respond?
This is the third iteration of Freedom Edge, and it's the most advanced yet. It's a critical joint military drill, focusing on things like ballistic missile defense, air defense, medical evacuation, maritime interdiction.
All aimed at North Korea.
Explicitly designed to enhance readiness against North Korea's persistent nuclear and missile threats, and also to demonstrate powerful alliance cohesion and deterrence.
And North Korea's reaction? Predictable.
Highly predictable. North Korea, through senior officials like Kim Jong-un's sister and Park Jong-chan, the vice chairman of the Central Military Commission, has already condemned these exercises as a nuclear war rehearsal. They've warned of counteraction in a very clear and intensified way.
Standard rhetoric, or more serious?
It's standard rhetoric, but it's also a powerful act of strategic communication designed to deter. But it almost invariably provokes some kind of response. It creates this predictable cycle of escalation in East Asia.
And the timing, just before the UN General Assembly.
Exactly. That's likely a deliberate show of strength from the allies.
Got it. Amidst these military exercises, Syria begins its first parliamentary elections since the collapse of the Assad regime in December 2024. What does this political process actually look like, given the recent dramatic history there?
Well, this election process runs through September 20th. It's designed to determine a new 210-seat People's Assembly. But it's important to understand, this is a hybrid model.
Hybrid? How?
140 members are selected indirectly through local electoral colleges, while 70 are directly appointed by the transitional president, Ahmed al-Shara.
So not exactly a grassroots democratic exercise.
No, it's a carefully managed top-down political process, primarily aimed at establishing a functioning state institution for the transitional government. Its success will be measured largely by its ability to tackle immense reconstruction challenges and gain some international legitimacy rather than by traditional democratic standards. It's a pragmatic step in post-conflict state building.
Okay. Shifting back to U.S. economic data, the September manufacturing survey for New York State, the Empire State Manufacturing Survey, is also out today. What's the forecast, and how will that factor into the broader economic picture?
The median forecast for the Empire State is 4.5. That's a notable decline from the previous month's 11.9.
Significant drop.
Yeah. This data point reinforces that narrative of a cooling U.S. economy, shows weaker manufacturing activity. And this kind of softer economic data, it feeds directly into the broader expectations for the Fed's highly anticipated rate decision later this week. Makes a rate cut seem more necessary.
Right, building the case for the Fed to act.
So on Monday, the market implications are pretty clear. China's economic data,
yeah, that'll
significantly shape the global outlook. Robust growth could signal demand, but also fuel inflation fears if their stimulus is big.
And the U.S. data.
The softer U.S. manufacturing survey reinforces expectations for the Fed to ease later in the week. Puts downward pressure on the dollar, potentially.
In North Korea.
North Korea's almost certain response to Freedom Edge 25 that could trigger near-term spikes in regional tensions and market reactions, especially in Asian equities and currencies. Any concrete, provocative action from Pyongyang, like a missile test, could send ripples across global risk assets. Drive a flight to safety.
Makes sense. Okay, moving to Tuesday, September 16th, 2025. Today, the week's central financial narrative truly begins as the Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC, starts its two-day meeting. What are market participants expecting from the Fed and why?
Markets are pricing in a near certainty of a rate cut. Probabilities are ranging from 70% up to 93% for a 25 basis point reduction.
So it's pretty much baked in.
Largely, yes. But this expectation isn't born of robust economic strength. It's coming from a series of weaker than expected U.S. labor market reports, indicating a cooling economy, maybe growing recession risks.
Okay.
Today's key U.S. economic data releases will be crucial last-minute inputs for the FOMC's decision-making process.
So today's data really matters for tomorrow's decision.
Absolutely. And it raises this important question. Is this an insurance cut? You know, a proactive move to keep the expansion going?
Yeah.
Or is it more reactive? A response to rising recession risks that maybe the market hasn't fully acknowledged yet. The Fed's communication tomorrow will be absolutely key in shaping that narrative.
Got it. And as the Fed meets, Malawi holds its pivotal general elections today amidst a severe economic crisis. What are the key dynamics at play for the 7 million registered voters in a country facing such economic hardship?
This is a significant election. It's the second presidential election held under the 50+1 simple majority threshold.
That was put in after the last election was annulled, right?
Exactly. After the contentious 2019 election was annulled. The campaign now is largely shaped by deep public dissatisfaction, severe food shortages, high cost of living, lack of jobs.
So the economy is front and center. Who's leading?
Current polls suggest the Democratic Progressive Party, led by former President Peter Mutharika, is leading with about 43%, against the incumbent Lazarus Chakwera's Malawi Congress Party at 29%.
That probably means a runoff.
Highly likely, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But crucially, there are significant concerns over the credibility and independence of the Malawi Electoral Commission, the MEC.
Uh-oh. Why?
It creates a high risk of a disputed outcome and potential political instability in a nation already under immense public pressure for economic transformation. It's a stark example of that economic stress directly fueling political instability we talked about.
Right. Speaking of economic data, several key U.S. indicators are also released this morning. Advanced retail sales, industrial production, capacity utilization. What are the forecasts and how will these potentially influence the Fed's deliberations happening right now?
Forecasts include advanced retail sales at a modest 0.3% for August, industrial production at a slight contraction, minus 0.1% for August, and capacity utilization, which measures how much factories are producing, around 77.4%.
So pretty muted overall.
Yeah. And weaker than expected figures in these reports would certainly reinforce the narrative of a slowing economy. It would cement the case for a rate cut. It might even increase the odds of a larger 50 basis point move from the Fed tomorrow.
But what if they're stronger than expected?
Conversely, surprisingly strong data could introduce significant uncertainty. It would challenge the dovish consensus and likely lead to market volatility as traders reassess the likelihood and magnitude of an imminent easing.
So these figures are truly critical last-minute inputs for the FOMC.
Absolutely critical for tomorrow's decision. The confluence of these U.S. economic data releases today will directly set the stage for tomorrow's highly anticipated Fed decision. Softer retail sales or industrial production figures could reinforce the argument for a rate cut, potentially increasing volatility as markets react to these final inputs.
And strong data.
If the data comes in surprisingly strong, it could introduce uncertainty, challenge that dovish consensus, could lead to significant swings in anticipation of the Fed's stance, maybe even raise the small possibility of an unexpected no-cut scenario.
Okay, Wednesday, September 17, 2025. This is truly a monumental day. This is the conclusion of the Fed's two-day meeting. What's the overwhelming market expectation? What are the different scenarios we could see play out after Chair Powell's press conference?
The overwhelming expectation is indeed that 25 basis point cut to the federal funds rate, bringing the target range down to 4.0004.25%.
But the cut itself isn't the whole story.
No. The market's focus will be less on the cut itself, which is largely priced in. It's more on the forward guidance from the Fed. And the quarterly summary of economic projections, the SAP, that's the Fed's economic outlook,
yeah.
And the closely watched dot plot.
Remind us what the dot plot shows.
It's a graphical representation of where each FOMC member projects the future federal funds rate will be. This updated dot plot is widely expected to signal a median expectation of 3 total rate cuts by the end of 2025.
3 cuts this year. Okay.
Oh,
so
yeah.
What are the scenarios?
We could see several distinct scenarios play out. First, the expected dovish pivot. That's the 25 BPs cut plus dovish forward guidance. This would likely fuel a risk-on rally in equities investors moving into riskier assets like stocks. We'd see a weakening U.S. dollar, declining treasury yields. Market confirms its base case.
This area too.
A hawkish surprise. The Fed decides to hold rates steady, defying market expectations. This would signal persistent inflation concerns are winning out over slowing growth fears. It would likely lead to a sharp stock sell-off, a surging dollar, spiking bond yields, a major shock.
And the third possibility?
The fear signal. A more aggressive 50 basis point cut.
50 points, wouldn't that be super dovish?
Seemingly yes, but such a move might signal that the Fed sees a much higher risk of a significant economic downturn than currently priced in by the market. It could lead to an initial rally that quickly reverses into fear of an impending recession.
So Powell's words are key.
Ultimately, Chair Powell's language, his characterization of the economy, the precise rationale for the decision will be paramount. Any indication that this cut is the beginning of a sustained easing cycle will be far more impactful than just a one-off adjustment.
Got it. Now, right alongside the Fed, the Bank of Canada is also announcing its policy interest rate today.
Yeah.
What's the consensus there, and how does it fit into this great monetary synchronization?
Out of 28 economists surveyed, 18 are expecting a 25 basis point cut to Canada's policy interest rate, bringing it down to 2.50% from the current 2.75%.
So easing there too.
Yeah. This is a key part of that great monetary synchronization we discussed. If we connect this to the bigger picture, coordinated cuts globally aim to prevent competitive currency devaluations, stabilize economies. But they also raise concerns about a synchronized global economic weakness that demands such simultaneous action, suggests central banks everywhere are reacting to similar deteriorating conditions. A shared challenge.
Okay. Over in Europe, the European Commission is anticipated to formally present its 19th package of sanctions against Russia. What new measures are on the table, and how effective might they be?
This package aims to further degrade Russia's war economy, targeting its remaining revenue streams, its military-industrial complex, and its increasingly sophisticated ability to circumvent existing restrictions.
How are they doing that, targeting circumvention?
Key areas include intensified anti-circumvention measures targeting third-country entities, particularly those in China, India, Turkey, that facilitate the transfer of dual-use goods.
Dual-use, civilian and military application.
Exactly. It also includes sanctions against Russia's growing shadow fleet of oil tankers used to evade the G7 price cap on Russian oil, further financial restrictions, and exploring how to use the profits generated from frozen Russian assets for Ukraine's benefit.
Sounds comprehensive, but will it pass?
That's the catch. Unanimous adoption is required from all 27 EU member states. Potential resistance from Hungary and Slovakia, particularly on energy measures, highlights those persistent strains in Western cohesion. Could dilute the package's impact.
Right. And we also have U.S. housing starts and building permits for August today. What are the forecasts? What do these tell us?
Both housing starts, new home construction, and building permits approvals for future construction are forecast at 1.37 million units for August.
And their significance.
These are crucial indicators of the health of the U.S. housing market and broader economic activity. A stronger housing market can signal consumer confidence, investment. A weaker one suggests a slowdown. These figures provide further context to the Fed's ongoing assessment of the economy, indicate how interest rates and economic sentiment are influencing a vital sector.
So Wednesday is really make or break for markets.
Wednesday is truly high stakes. The synchronized central bank decisions from the Fed and the Bank of Canada will trigger immediate significant reactions across equities, bonds, currencies, especially USD CAD. Any surprise or nuance in their forward guidance, particularly from Chair Powell, will dictate market direction for days.
And the sanctions.
On top of that, the EU sanctions package, while needing that unanimous vote, could have direct implications for energy markets, especially if it effectively targets Russia's shadow fleet. Could impact global oil supply and pricing. The financial sector could also see ripple effects from further restrictions on Russian entities. The sheer volume of critical news makes this a day of extreme volatility potential.
Got it. On to Thursday, September 18th, 2025. More central bank action and major social unrest in France. The Bank of Japan begins its two-day monetary policy meeting today. What's the expectation for the BOJ, given that other major central banks are easing?
The Bank of Japan, the BOJ, is widely expected to maintain its policy interest rate at 0.5%, although there's always a possibility that further tightening could be considered later this year.
So they're holding steady for now. An outlier.
Yeah, Japan stands out as a clear outlier in this synchronized easing environment we're seeing from the U.S., Canada, and likely the U.K. Their guidance on a future tightening path will be absolutely crucial for the Japanese yen, the JPY. Any hint of a more hawkish stance of bias towards higher rates could significantly impact global capital flows. especially given the history of the JPY carry trade.
Right, borrowing cheap yen to invest elsewhere.
Exactly.
And then the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee, the MPC, announces its interest rate decision. What's anticipated for the UK economy?
A potential 25 basis point cut from the current 4.00% is widely expected from the Bank of England.
So easing expected there too?
Yeah, this would be part of a gradual easing cycle, designed to stimulate the UK economy, which has been grappling with persistent inflation and slowing growth. This decision further contributes to that great monetary synchronization trend. Another major central bank responding to similar global economic pressures indicates a broad-based shift towards more accommodative policy.
Okay, now here's where it gets really interesting on the social and political front. A massive nationwide general strike across France. What's driving this widespread protest? What could be its impact?
This strike is a formidable display of public discontent. It's coordinated by 8 major trade union confederations, the Intersyndical, and it's a direct protest against the French government's proposed $43.8 billion austerity plan.
$43 billion. What kind of cuts are we talking about?
This ambitious plan includes deep cuts to public services, the proposed elimination of 2 national holidays, significant reductions in healthcare reimbursements, even pension freezes.
Oof, that sounds like it would hit hard.
Absolutely. Widespread disruption to transport is expected. The national rail operator, SNCF, anticipates only 30-40% of its services running. Severe impacts on air travel, schools, hospitals are also forecast.
So, a major challenge to the government.
A formidable challenge to the French government's authority. Highlights profound socioeconomic discontent. A prime example of how economic stress is acting as that powerful political catalyst, creating significant instability in a major Eurozone economy.
Right. We also have several U.S. Treasury auctions and more economic data today, including initial jobless claims. What are these telling us about the health of the U.S. economy after the Fed's decision yesterday?
Initial jobless claims, new applications for unemployment benefits are forecast at 243,000 for the week of September 13th. The Philadelphia Fed Manufacturing Survey is forecast at 4.0 for September.
What's the significance of these now?
These are important real-time indicators of the U.S. labor market and manufacturing health, providing immediate context to the Fed's recent decision and its impact. They help us gauge whether the economy is indeed slowing, as the Fed likely anticipates, or if there's unexpected resilience.
And the Treasury auction.
The 10-year TIPS reopening auction is significant. TIPS are Treasury inflation-protected securities. Their yields will reflect updated inflation expectations after the Fed decision. Gives us a market read on inflation.
Okay, so what are the market implications for Thursday?
The coordinated global central bank moves today, particularly from the Bank of Japan holding and the Bank of England potentially cutting, could significantly impact currency markets. We'll be watching GBPOSD and USDJPY closely for volatility as investors react.
And the French strike.
Furthermore, that massive French general strike has the potential to trigger significant Eurozone instability, not just through direct economic disruption, but also by impacting broader market confidence in European political stability. This could put further downward pressure on the euro, especially given the existing economic challenges in Germany.
Makes sense. Turning to Friday, September 19, 2025. The Bank of Japan concludes its 2-day meeting, and then we have a major financial market spectacle, Triple Witching Day. First, what's the BOJ's final policy decision and guidance?
Rate maintenance at 0.5% is the base case expectation from the Bank of Japan, along with their guidance on the future tightening path. The nuance here is crucial. Any indication of a more aggressive tightening later, or even a subtle shift in their assessment of inflation, could have significant implications for global capital flows in the yen. The BOJ is navigating a very delicate path as that relative outlier. Any unexpected move could create ripples.
Okay, let's unpack this financial market spectacle. Triple witching day. For those unfamiliar, what exactly is it and why is it so significant, particularly coming just 2 days after the Federal Reserve's major decision?
Right, triple witching day. It's a quarterly event when 3 major classes of financial derivatives expire simultaneously. We're talking stock index futures, stock index options, and individual stock options.
All expiring at once. What does that cause?
It means a massive number of these contracts must either be exercised, rolled over, or closed out. forcing significant position unwinding. This leads to dramatically increased trading volume and often high market volatility, especially during the witching hour, 3:00 to 4:00 p.m. Eastern time.
And the timing after the Fed is key.
The timing is critically important. Because it immediately follows the Fed's rate decision, it effectively acts as a volatility amplifier. It's the moment the market physically enacts its verdict on the Fed's new policy stance.
Can you give an example?
Sure. A dovish Fed decision more inclined to ease policy could fuel what's known as a gamma squeeze. That's when a rapid price move sources options dealers, who sold those options, to buy or sell the underlying asset themselves to stay hedged, further amplifying the price move.
And a hawkish surprise.
Conversely, a hawkish surprise from the Fed could trigger cascading selling as various hedged positions unravel violently. It forces hands.
Got it. Wrapping up the financial week, FedEx Corporation releases its Q1 FY 2026 earnings after market close. What are analysts focusing on for this global logistics giant?
Analysts are closely watching for expected earnings per share, EPS, of $3.64 and revenue of $21.69 billion. But the focus will be squarely on the company's ongoing $4 billion cost-cutting program. Also, the impact of the recent loss of its U.S. Postal Service contract and progress on its Network 2.0 initiative, which aims to optimize its global operations.
It's a bellwether for the global economy.
Exactly. FedEx's earnings provide a real-world snapshot of global logistics and economic health, offering crucial insights into consumer and business spending trends after a week of major central bank decisions and geopolitical shifts. Their forward guidance can offer a powerful real-time perspective on the trajectory of global economic activity.
So how does triple witching play into the market narrative on Friday?
Friday's triple witching day will be the physical arena where the market renders its verdict on the week's central bank actions, especially the Fed's decision. We anticipate outsized price movements, extremely high trading volumes. This event's proximity to the Fed announcement means any lingering uncertainty or strong directional conviction from the central bank decisions will be dramatically amplified as massive derivative positions are unwound. Could lead to sharp shifts in major indices and individual stocks. It's a day when technical factors can really overwhelm fundamental drivers.
Okay. As we look to the weekend and beyond, Saturday, September 20, 2025, sees the conclusion of Syria's first parliamentary election since the Assad regime collapse. What happens next for the country?
Vote counting and results announcements are expected to follow the conclusion of the Syrian elections. The newly formed 210-seat People's Assembly will serve as the legislative branch of the transitional government. It's tasked with passing new laws, approving crucial economic reforms, and working to gain international recognition and legitimacy until a permanent constitution can be drafted.
So a step towards stability.
A fragile but crucial step in the country's post-conflict state-building process, aiming to provide a semblance of stable governance after years of turmoil.
And on Sunday, September 21st, 2025, in the Republic of Guinea, there's a constitutional referendum.
Oh.
On a new constitution, framed by the ruling military junta as a step towards civilian rule. But what's the real story here? Is it genuine?
Well, the draft constitution proposes a 7-year presidential term, renewable once, and a bicameral parliament. However, major opposition parties have largely boycotted the process.
Why?
They view it as an opaque maneuver to perpetuate dictatorship, an attempt by the military junta to entrench its power rather than genuinely transition to civilian rule.
So, another example of that democratic legitimacy theme.
Exactly. While a yes vote is widely expected in this controlled environment, it's unlikely to resolve the country's underlying political crisis. It serves as another poignant example of democratic legitimacy under siege, where the form of democracy is maintained, but genuine choice and political competition are constrained.
Right. As the UN officially observes the International Day of Peace on Sunday, Climate Week NYC 2025 also begins, running in parallel with the UN General Assembly. What's the theme? Power on? And its significance amidst such heightened global tensions from the week.
The theme Power On emphasizes the urgent need for clean energy transition and climate resilience, aiming to accelerate action on climate change. This marks the formal start of the high-level diplomatic season at the UN, where the consequences of the week's hard power maneuvers, the military exercises, economic sanctions, geopolitical realignments will undoubtedly be debated.
So climate goals versus immediate security needs.
Exactly. It raises this critical and enduring question for global leaders. How will the long-term imperative of decarbonization contend with short-term strategic needs for energy security and national defense? Needs which have been so acutely highlighted by the recent geopolitical events of this past week, it creates a fundamental tension.
A major tension, indeed. So, expert speaker, with all these complex and interconnected events, from central bank decisions to geopolitical flashpoints, what does this all mean for the markets? Our sources suggest we're looking at a volatility vortex and a significant underpricing of tail risks.
You've hit on the critical observation there. Markets are currently at, well, extreme complacency levels, which is quite concerning given the event risk we're facing.
Complacency, how so?
The S&P 500, for example, is at all-time high, 6,584. The VIX, the fear gauge, is near multi-year lows at 14.76. And the NASDAQ's price-to-earnings PE ratio is an extreme 33, compared to a historical average around 20.
Wow, 33 PE.
This setup is identical to what we saw in February 2018 and August 2024. Periods just before violent volatility explosions, the market is effectively pricing in perfection, despite facing the most complex and interconnected event risk in years, from coordinated central banks to geopolitics. The key insight: this complacency is a significant vulnerability.
So what's your core prediction based on that?
My core prediction for this week, therefore, is bearish with extreme volatility. The sheer coordination of central bank actions itself is a telling sign. Central banks typically only coordinate when they are truly frightened by underlying economic conditions, not when everything is smooth sailing.
A coordination signals fear.
I believe so. Then the triple witching event on Friday acts as a massive volatility amplifier. Takes the Fed's Wednesday move and creates a Thursday-Friday volatility explosion. We expect a violent repricing across all asset classes. Initial risk-off moves investors fleeing risk, potentially giving way to a bull trap before a larger, more structural decline takes hold.
A bull trap. A rally that sucks people in before falling.
Exactly. A false dawn.
That's a strong and clear prediction. With four major central banks moving in such a short window, what are the different market scenarios that investors are considering for this central bank convergence trade? And what's your take?
Right. Our sources outline three main possibilities. First, the bullish case. About a 35% probability. This sees a coordinated easing rally. Markets love the synchronized action driving the S&P 500 to maybe 6,900, 7,000. Arguments here are that coordinated cuts remove currency war risks, and the Fed's 25 BP's cut is already largely priced in.
Okay, bullish case, then the opposite.
Then there's the bearish case, a higher 45% probability. Here, coordinated cuts synchronize global recession fear, leading to an S&P 500 drop to maybe 5,800, 6,050. This view points to the Fed cutting into an already softening labor market, unemployment at 4.2%, as a sign of hidden economic damage.
And the third.
Finally, the chaos case, about 20% probability. This describes extreme volatility. Intraday swings of 3-5%. VIX spiking to 45 plus index. This scenario considers how triple witching combined with the Fed action could create unprecedented technical market flows, just overwhelming everything.
Your prediction leans towards?
My prediction, as I mentioned, leans heavily towards bearish with extreme volatility. The very act of coordination signals fear. This isn't about a smooth, soft landing, and triple witching right after the Fed is just too potent a combination sets the stage for that Thursday-Friday volatility explosion.
So for investors trying to navigate this, what's a potential strategy?
A primary strategic approach would be to increase exposure to volatility. The VIX, down at 14.76, seems absurdly low for this level of event risk. One way is through options, maybe buying October VIX 25 calls, anticipating a significant spike. Target a VIX of 35-40.
Okay. Long volatility. Anything else?
A secondary strategy could be to fade the initial Fed rally, that classic buy the rumor, sell the fact. If the S&P 500 rallies hard, say more than 2% to 6,715 plus right after the Fed decision, that might be an opportune moment to consider reducing equity exposure, shorting the S&P 500 perhaps. Target an S&P drop back to around 6,380, anticipating a reversal as the deeper implications sink in.
Let's turn to geopolitics. Our sources highlight the emergency Arab Islamic summit, the Freedom Edge, military exercises, the EU's 19th sanctions package. How will these impact markets? What's your prediction for this geopolitical risk premium explosion?
Again, a range of scenarios here. The bullish case, maybe 25% probability. Markets largely ignore the geopolitical risks, minimal impact. Just noise.
The bearish case.
The bearish case, higher at 40% probability, envisions a significant risk premium being priced in. Crude oil spiking 15-20%. Equity markets down 5-7%, driven by events like a North Korean missile test or concrete steps from the Arab summit pivoting away from the U.S. Then there's the black swan case, low probability, maybe 5%, describes catastrophic, unpredictable events like a North Korean missile test going significantly wrong, something that could trigger market circuit breakers.
And your prediction here?
My prediction is a moderate bearish scenario with an energy spike. The Arab summit's timing reacting to the Israeli strikes is critical. I expect concrete steps signaling a move away from the U.S. security umbrella in the Middle East that will inevitably trigger oil volatility. And North Korea. I believe they will almost certainly make some provocative move during Freedom Edge, further escalating tensions. This confluence creates a definite risk-off environment, compounding central bank concerns, pressuring equities, driving safe haven flows.
So for investors, strategies around energy and defense.
Exactly. A primary strategic focus could be long energy exposure, specifically oil. Crude oil at $62 seems too low for the Middle East realignment risk. Could involve buying crude oil October $70 straight calls, for example. Target oil moving to $75-$80.
And defense.
A secondary strategy is to increase exposure to defense stocks versus the market. Companies like Lockheed Martin, LMT, Raytheon, RTX, Northrop Grumman, NOC. They tend to perform well during heightened military tensions. Could involve going long these names, maybe versus shorting the SPY ETF, target 5-7% outperformance.
With four central banks making decisions this week, what's the outlook for the U.S. dollar? How might it react to all these powerful forces converging? The dollar wrecking ball idea.
We could see several outcomes for the U.S. dollar. There's a dollar bull scenario, maybe 30% probability. USD strengthens if the Fed cuts less aggressively than others, or if geopolitical tensions drive a flight to safety. Pushing the dollar index, DXY, from 97.61 towards 102.103.
Or the opposite, dollar bear.
A dollar bear scenario, 35% probability. USD weakens if Fed cuts signal the end of U.S. economic exceptionalism, or if BRICS payment systems gain significant traction, pushing DXY down to 92.93.
And the third possibility?
Extreme FX volatility, also around 35% probability, suggests 2-3% daily moves in major currency pairs due to multiple central bank decisions and the unwinding of Terry trades. Just wild swings.
And your prediction for the dollar? Choppy, but stronger.
My prediction is the dollar will be choppy, but ultimately stronger. An initial Fed cut might weaken it temporarily, but the unfolding European chaos, French strikes, German recession, coupled with broader geopolitical tensions, that will drive safe haven flows back into the USD. Expect dollar weakness Wednesday, Thursday, then strength Friday, Monday, as these larger forces assert themselves.
So strategies for currency traders.
For investors, a primary strategic approach would be to position for euro volatility. The ECB holding rates while the Fed cuts, plus the French chaos. It creates a ripe environment for a large move in EURUSD, currently around 1.16 stuff, 1.17. Could involve an EURUSD straddle option strategy, target a 400-plus pip move either way.
And a safe haven play.
A secondary strategy. Long CHF versus everything. Long the Swiss franc against a basket of EUR, GBP, JPY. The Swiss franc is the ultimate safe haven in chaos. Target 3-4% appreciation.
With all these shifts across macro and geopolitics, what about sector performance? Growth versus value. The great divergence.
My prediction is a violent rotation from growth to value stocks. This week marks a potential turning point, possibly the end of the AI tech bubble, or at least a major correction. Rate cuts simply cannot offset the massive tech valuations that NASDAQ PE of 33 is 65% overvalued historically, nor can they offset geopolitical deglobalization hurting supply chains, rising energy costs, increasing regulatory risk from elections. This combination will drive capital away from overextended growth towards more defensive, fundamentally sound value plays.
So specific trade ideas there.
For investors, a primary strategy would be short tech, long small caps. Short the QQQ ETF NASDAQ 100 at $580 maybe, while simultaneously going long the IWM ETF Russell 2000. Tech is at extreme valuations. Small caps typically benefit more from Fed cuts. Target 10% relative performance.
The specific sector ETFs.
For broader sector strategies, consider going long XLE energy, XLU utilities, XLP staples, those defensive sectors, while simultaneously shorting XLK technology and XLY discretionary. Target 7-10% outperformance for the longs.
This week's triple witching event, right after the Fed, creates a uniquely explosive options environment. What specific dynamics should investors be aware of? The options and derivative spectacular.
We're looking at several key, highly technical dynamics. First, significant dealer gamma. Massive options positions at key strike prices that dealers must unwind to stay hedged creates forced buying or selling.
Okay, what else?
Second, the volatility of volatility itself becomes volatile. VVIX spikes, meaning even the expected swings become unpredictable, makes standard hedging very difficult. Third, likely a breakdown in traditional correlations. Assets that usually move together might diverge wildly. Typical hedges might fail.
And
fourth, systematic deleveraging by large funds. CTAs, risk parity funds. Forced selling as volatility rises. This confluence is why triple witching is such a potent amplifier, especially after a major Fed move. Technical factors will heavily influence price.
So how can investors potentially manage risk or play this?
For those looking to manage risk in this highly explosive environment, one strategy is hedge with volatility options, buying options on the VIX itself, like a VIX 253545 called Butterfly. Allows for explosive payoff if VIX spikes significantly, but caps risk and reward.
Any other options, strategies?
Another is the dispersion trade, going long single stock volatility, short index volatility. In a crisis, correlations often break down. Individual stocks can move wildly differently from the index, offers opportunities for this more sophisticated strategy.
And for the bond markets, what's your outlook after the Fed decision and the week's other major events? Will the bond vigilantes return?
I predict an initial rally followed by a violent reversal. Bonds will likely rally Wednesday right after the Fed cut. Lower rates boost bond prices. However, China's massive stimulus, plus mounting fiscal concerns globally, governments needing to borrow more, will trigger a significant sell-off by week's end.
So a whipsaw in yields.
Expect the 10-year Treasury yield to whipsaw, maybe from 4.0% down towards 3.7% initially, then snap back up sharply to 4.3% as inflation concerns and supply pressures reassert themselves. The bond vigilantes will indeed be making their presence felt.
So a trade idea for bonds.
For fixed income investors, a primary strategic approach might be to short 10-year notes after the initial Fed rally. Specifically, if the 10-year yield drops below 3.8% reacting to the cut, that might be an entry point for those anticipating the reversal. Target a return to 4.2-4.3% yield.
Will this chaotic week finally usher in a new era for commodities? Some sources suggest a supercycle ignition. What's your take?
Absolutely. My prediction is that commodities will massively outperform. This week marks what I believe to be the beginning of a new commodity supercycle.
Not just short-term, a supercycle.
I think so. Driven by multiple reinforcing factors, intensified deglobalization fragmenting supply chains, currency debasement from widespread central bank actions, geopolitical fragmentation increasing resource nationalism. Gold, already near all-time highs at $3,686, is signaling smart money positioning for chaos. Hedging against loss of confidence in traditional monetary systems suggests broad-based strength across the complex energy, metals, agriculture.
How could investors play that?
A strategic approach would be to build a commodity supercycle basket, a diversified long position across key commodities, maybe 30% gold from $3,686, 30% Ascent from $62.56, 20% copper, 20% agriculture, target gold at $4,200, oil at $75, aim for a 15-20% basket gain over 3 months, reflects a significant re-rating.
Given the extreme tail risks our sources mentioned, what are some essential disaster insurances or black swan hedges every portfolio should consider for this kind of volatility vortex?
Right. For hedging against extreme nonlinear risks, low probability, high impact events, our sources recommend several strategies. First, consider deep out-of-money puts on broad market indices, options that only profit if the market drops significantly, like buying SPX 5,250 puts for October, about 20% OTM from the current S&P 6,584, offer asymmetric payoff in a crash, cost only about near 0.3% of a portfolio at current low vol.
Okay, deep OTM puts. What else?
Second, long volatility of volatility. Through VVIX calls or VIX call spreads, explosive payoff in true panic scenarios. VVIX measures the vol of the VIX itself. Third, a 5% allocation to physical gold or Bitcoin as a monetary system hedge, benefiting from any loss of central bank credibility.
And for specific vulnerabilities.
Fourth, for those with higher risk tolerance, maybe credit default swap CDS on European banks. The French strikes combined with the German recession creates banking crisis potential. CDS offer asymmetric payoff if a credit crunch happens. It's disaster insurance.
Expert speaker, this has been an incredibly comprehensive deep dive into a truly pivotal week. What's your ultimate synthesis of this volatility vortex as we look back on it?
This week, September 14, 21, 2025, represents not merely a busy period, but a systemic transition point. We saw multiple equilibria stable states become unstable simultaneously. The feedback loops between economic, political, military domains accelerated dramatically. The compression of these events suggests a global system under such profound stress that crisis points are clustering rather than distributing. The key insight: the old rules are visibly breaking down. New ones haven't fully emerged. It's a fundamental shift in the operating environment.
So as the dust settles, what's your take on the market's final verdict regarding the Federal Reserve's attempt to engineer a soft landing? Do they pull it off or confirm deeper fears?
The key question moving forward is whether the Fed successfully convinced investors its easing is proactive, sustaining the expansion, or if it inadvertently stoked deeper fears of an impending recession. The performance of risk assets versus safe havens immediately following triple witching will offer the clearest verdict.
What's next week's focus then?
Next week, the market's focus shifts to crucial data: advanced durable goods orders, the final Q2 GDP estimate, and most importantly, the PCE price index, the Fed's preferred inflation measure. That PCE data will either validate or challenge this new policy stance, will be the next major indicator of whether the market truly bought the Fed's narrative.
And geopolitically, what's the lasting impact of this week's events on the global stage?
The geopolitical temperature was significantly raised across multiple theaters. East Asia saw enhanced trilateral cooperation, U.S., Japan, South Korea, but predictably provoked North Korea. Sets the stage for potential near-term provocations. Europe's 19th sanctions package signaled resolve against Russia, but the massive French general strike exposed deep internal fissures. Could continue to challenge European unity and stability.
And elsewhere.
In Africa, the Malawian election and Guinean referendum outcomes will have lasting implications for democratic stability. High risks of contested results. The transitional elections in Syria marked a fragile top-down step in post-conflict state building. The key insight is that regional dynamics are asserting themselves with increasing force.
What's fascinating here is how these hard power maneuvers, military drills, economic sanctions, actually set the stage for and heavily influence the soft power diplomacy that will follow at the UN General Assembly and Climate Week NYC. It's not a contradiction, is it?
It's absolutely not a contradiction. It's two sides of the same strategic coin in modern statecraft. The hard power actions shape the facts on the ground. They create leverage. They establish the parameters for the diplomatic discussions that follow.
Can you give an example?
The strength of the U.S.-Japan-South Korea alliance, shown in Freedom Edge, directly influences Indo-Pacific security talks at the UN. Similarly, the economic pressure on Moscow via EU sanctions frames the debate on the European security order and international law. This week serves as a microcosm of 21st century statecraft, illustrating how military readiness and economic strength are essential precursors. They heavily influence diplomatic outcomes, shaping what can even be discussed.
Briefly, expert speaker, what were the most critical emerging trends you observed this week that we should all keep an eye on?
I saw four key trends crystallizing. First, synchronized deglobalization towards regional blocs, countries prioritizing regional ties over global ones. Second, the full economic weaponization of every tool available: tariffs, sanctions, everything. Third, widespread institutional zombification. Institutions maintain form but lose substance and power. And finally, a dangerous temporal compression. All actors operating on accelerated timelines, reacting much faster. These, for me, are hallmarks of a global system in profound transition.
Wow. Okay. Expert speaker, after this truly comprehensive deep dive, what's the one provocative thought you want to leave our listeners with? Something for them to mull over or explore on their own that builds on this week's insights?
I think this week reveals that we are witnessing not merely the management of a stable global system, but the volatile transition between world orders. The old rules no longer apply in many domains, but new ones have not yet fully emerged to replace them. And in such uncertain transitions, seemingly small or localized events can act as unexpected triggers, leading to historical shifts with unexpectedly large and far-reaching consequences for everyone.
An incredibly insightful deep dive into a week that will undoubtedly be studied for years to come. Thank you for joining us today and letting us help you unpack all these fascinating and sometimes unsettling insights. We hope this has given you plenty to mull over and explore on your own. Until next time, stay curious and keep digging deeper.